Hi, welcome to Digital Dialogues, your compact conversations on the future of technology. My name is Rene from Reply, and today we're going to talk about the art of 3D volumetric capture. And for this, I'm honored to have a special expert guest today, Sven Bliedung von der Heide. Hi, Sven, how are you today?
Hi, I'm doing great, and you?
I'm doing also fantastic. Glad to see you again and to chat. So before we start with the questions, please tell us a bit about yourself and your background as it relates to, you know, anything, computer graphics, volumetric capture, and you name it.
Yeah, I have a background in the movie industry. So I worked on a lot of different feature film projects, mainly in the past as a VFX artist. And I founded several companies to do visual effects for feature films. I also worked in the domain of 360 video when it was like hyped a long time ago, where we built like drones and stuff like that to capture 360 with intensive shots with cars jumping around and stuff like that. And yeah, I always am intrigued by pushing the boundaries of what is possible at the moment. So that's what I really love to do all the time. And once actually like stuff like visual effects were easy to solve at home PCs, it got boring for me. So I moved on to the next topic. And right now I'm the CEO of the VoluCap company. And the focus there is to create fully realistic three-dimensional human representations, like digital doubles of humans. And I would say this is one of the biggest challenges we have nowadays still. That's why it's really like, I love to solve it. And yeah, we basically created a new system where we can capture humans in motion at the same time with the surface. And this makes it way more realistic and natural. So we can now capture volumetrically humans in 3D space. And this is what our main goal is, to make it better and better from year to year and improve the quality.
Yes. And what I've seen so far is pretty impressive. And full disclaimer, as Sven invited me to his capture studio maybe 1 or 2 years ago, I don't recall, and it is amazing. Like, folks, you have to see it with your own eyes. But I'm sure on the VoluCap site, you can actually find some screenshots and videos. And right.
Yeah, it looks basically like a white room. Yeah, you know, I mean, it looks like a fully white room with a lot of cameras peeking behind the curtain. And yeah, a bit like a spaceship. A lot of people tell me it looks like a spaceship or like the white room from Matrix, gets all this equipment. Actually, yeah. When Lana saw the room the first time, she was like, yeah, it already looks like our set dressing, which was quite nice.
Yeah, and when you just hear the name, right, folks, you gotta understand that Sven's company also helped with the Matrix 3 movie, right? So what was the stuff you actually did there, or how much can you talk about it, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, on Matrix Resurrections, we did a lot of crazy systems, actually. I don't know. I mean, Lana Wachowski, the director, she's a very crazy person in her own. And when she came to our studio, she saw the white room. And one of her first questions to me was, for example, can you build the whole thing underwater? And I was like, what the fuck? The crazy thing is actually we got like, this was the first rig we built for them, like within 3 months, we built a fully underwater volumetric capture studio with building own underwater housings, the whole setup, own algorithms, own calibration systems for underwater. And this was really like a good jump into the water of the project. And actually the idea was to create a new kind of bullet time effect. And you can see it on our website when you look at, there's a page about Matrix Resurrection where you see the shot. And it was meant actually to do the whole movie bullet time effects in this effect where you have like this waterish underwater look. And it looks very crazy and amazing. But the problem then with 2020 was that there was COVID hitting. And with that, every long-term planning on set was basically gone. And so we went into creating a lot of other crazy camera systems, like handheld systems with 8 cinema cameras and stuff like that. And this gave the productions the opportunity to, for example, change camera angles afterwards or to have more flexibility in the post. And they managed actually to be 2 months earlier ahead of schedule with shooting the whole movie. And one part was because they were sure that they don't need to reshoot so much stuff because they can change things afterwards and have more flexibility. This was something that we created. And we also created like customized camera systems for doing very high resolution deepfakes of the actors, which were like a combination of camera systems and training data to come across this like just internet deepfake stuff to a level where you can use it for feature film productions at 8K resolution, which is like a challenge in its own.
Oh yeah, I can totally see that. I mean, all of these AI models, they look fantastic at a small resolution, like 512 by 512, right? And then you have AI image upscaling, or you know, even a frame interpolation for movies. But still, there are limitations to this. But let's talk about Gen AI a little bit later, because I wanted to, first of all, understand the technology behind the 3D volumetric capturing, right? And for the folks that are not aware of, like Sven was saying, basically this technology is used to capture a human person and then to recreate them to get actually a 3D persona or 3D clone of that person, if you will. So that's 3D volumetric capture. And yeah, the setup is quite complex. But anyhow, let's dive into this technology behind it. And what are the key challenges you're actually facing in the process of, you know, converting, if you will, a real human scan into a digital avatar? Because, of course, I mean, maybe we also need to phrase a little bit differently. Like, we have the two scenarios, right? We have kind of offline rendering, and then we have like real-time rendering, right? And so, but with 3D capturing, like getting the data, you can, I guess, fulfill both output channels in some way. And I'm sure they have both their different technical challenges. So can you through the process a bit?
when you read history about film, there's a lot of things that repeats basically, and the same things happen to us as well. So if you look at the early days of images were shot, this was when the first photo cameras came out, actually, and then they tried to figure out if a horse has all his feet in the air when it's running, and so they created the first camera, which was like a very huge challenge to not just capture one image in a few minutes, but really to capture like 30 images per second, or 12, I think, in the beginning it was. And this was like the step from photo to video. And the same development, I would say, we see now in the 3D space, where we have 3D scanning systems, which can capture an image in a few minutes, basically, with a static scan. And we have moved from the static scanning image, which are now available since about also like 20 years on the market. I mean, some of you maybe know that you can go to even sometimes shopping malls, do a 3D scan, and you get like a 3D printed character of yourself. And this is basically like a 3D photo. And it's really similar like to the early days of photo shooting. And what we have now achieved is that we not do the single photo and try to animate a photo, but to really capture it like a movie, like really like capturing 30 frames per second or 60 frames per second. And this gives a huge benefit of having a fully authentic representation of the human, because every other technology on the market right now with motion capture and animation, they all try to mimic and reanimate a static image. And this is a huge problem, or the huge challenge we faced during the last decades, basically also in the movie industry, when you have like a digital representation of a human and it's basically animated by humans. And even if you use motion capture data, you lose so much details, because I mean, our brain is so good at detecting humans. Actually, even you can just imagine when you see someone across the street walking far away, a friend of yours, you will recognize that it's a person that you know, because our brain is so well trained. And when you even work long years in this domain of recreating humans, it's still, when you talk to the artist, the same situation that they create and animate a human in 3D, and then they don't know what they had to change to make it really look realistic, because there's so much stuff going on in your face, like blood pressure and stuff like this that change your colors. And so as a normal human, it's very hard to recreate a real human in motion. If it's a human that is not in motion, like a picture, like a painting, you can do it. I think that is believable. But as soon as a person's face has to move and so on, you always feel and see that usually something is off when it's used with motion capture or with handmade animation. And this is even for Hollywood, where they spend millions of creating short sequences. But now with our technology, the big benefit is actually that we have like a normal video. So we don't need to care about blood pressure under the lips or whatever, because it's all captured within the system that we have. And therefore, we don't need to reanimate anything or use any motion capture technology. And same goes for with wardrobe, for example. We don't need to simulate wardrobe or hair or stuff like that. Everything is captured in the same amount of time. And this is really like the big changing, or the game changer in the market, that I would say it gives a lot of flexibility and also a lot of speed for production. So when we did tests, for example, with the, I would call it like the traditional workflow or pipeline and the volume cap pipeline. When we did like A/B testing for production, it took more than 4 months to just create one character with the traditional workflow, where they did like hundreds of captures of the person and then they tried to reanimate it or animate it. And with our pipeline, it was like less than 3 days and they had the captured material already in 3D. They could use it on a virtual production stage and it looked far better than the animated persons. And this is like, it's not like a little step forward, but it's really like a big game changer in the industry.
Yeah, definitely. And like you're saying, you have these super high resolution cameras where you capture a lot of the small details, and the reconstruction, even for real time avatar, gives us a lot of those details. So where is this used actually right now?
Yeah, I mean, the applications are quite wide. I mean, one of the big challenges we faced, or that we want to take from the beginning, was we want to use our characters in movies. And to provide volumetric video for movies, where you also get be able to get closer to persons, you need a certain degree of, I would say, quality or resolution. And this came out to be one of the most challenging situations to push the resolution further and further, I would say. When we started in 2018, for example, the biggest challenges in the early days were like the software environment to bring basically the resolution that we already had down onto the model. But as further we went up and increasing our amount of resolution of the whole system, as more it became challenging also from, I would say, physical point of perspective, motion because of stress in materials or like heat and bending materials. I mean, it's like in a millimeter degree area, but we still can measure it and see it. And as higher you get basically with the resolution, the more challenging it comes to solve it. And we have now a full system resolution of more than 3,000 megapixels per frame, which is really, really a lot. It's really much. And with this resolution now, I think we get to, or we are at a level where we can have the person very realistically, even in VR, standing in front of you, and you can get very close and still don't feel that it's like a CG thing or whatever. So it still feels very natural and realistic. And you can compare it a bit with like an image, when you have like a photo with a high resolution, you can get closer to the image. If the resolution is lower, you need to be further away. But also on the other hand, because it's a 3D model and we actually extract the 3D depth information out of the data, you have to imagine that also the depth information becomes way more superior as more resolution you have basically in the end. So you see way more, I would say, like the nose, the ears, everything gets more detailed and more refinement as more resolution you basically can provide. So it's not just the pure texture resolution, but also the resolution of the surface. And those are things that became quite challenging to solve over the first years. And once we managed to get all the software pipeline down, that everything worked out, that we basically don't lose any information across the line with all these algorithms, we managed to then focus more on scaling up the whole system and setting up a portable stage which we can travel around with, capture on locations. And we even plan now to set up the portable stage, for example, in a surgery. So we it's not just for movie industry of course as well, but one big topic is like capturing data for AI systems to be trained and to be learning. And one big challenge for data is actually for robots, to provide good data for robots to learn and train. And we hope that we can capture full surgery actually volumetrically, and we get a lot of details from the hand of the surgeon basically, how he operates and how much pressure he puts on cutting through body parts and whatever. And with that information, we can way better train robots for the future, but also use the data for training real humans, because getting into a surgery room is not so widely common available all the time when you want to study it. And this is something that we can then provide access to, because we have captured the session one time and then we can scale it out. So those are also like use cases. But then from the entertainment point, I would say, as soon as you have a real representation of a human, you can do a lot of crazy, funny things. So we did like musicians, for example, we scanned, and then you can take a video with them as if they would stand in front of you. You can dance with them, and then you can share your video online with friends as well. So those are things you're like having famous people, and especially with, I would say now with newer VR headsets and so coming out, they're getting better and better and more easy to use. You have more resolution in those headsets, and it's a complete different feeling when you see a full person standing in front of you, even as an volume cap, but it feels like totally realistic and not like this feeling as if you're watching a movie on a 2D screen. And this is something that we also learned a lot, that the medium itself in VR has such more impact basically on the humans if you watch content. And personally for me, I really feel that 2D content is getting more and more boring for me. So I'm watching more and more stuff in VR, and having the possibility to capture in our studio like humans, like similar as on a normal set, and then you can arrange them in 3D in space, and you can tell your stories in 3D with real actors and not with animation. it provides another level of basically storytelling. And we did, for that purpose, for example, we did a bigger case also together with Holocaust survivors, where we captured over 20 Holocaust survivors. And this is now going through several schools where people can see them, the students can see them. And what I find really impressing is that the students really love to see stuff in VR, and they're really interested by testing the technology, but then also the feeling of getting access to content, which is usually not content you want to look at so much because it's very stressful. I mean, to hear the stories. And personally, for me, it's a very, very big difference, especially with topics like Holocaust. When I talk to those survivors and they talk me their stories, I really feel how I didn't like the topic, and I didn't want to believe that it's true, actually, what they tell me, because it's so off the reality that we are used to. Yeah. And when you just watch it on a 2D TV screen, I think the feeling of that it might be not true and that's just maybe exaggerated or whatever is always there in this 2D medium, and it will be even more than over the next years when more fake news and whatever coming up across the line. And having the version of the Holocaust survivor like standing in front of you in VR and looking into your eyes and telling you the story gives you such a big difference in emotions and in terms of how you believe the story and how you really feel that the person that's true what they're telling you, that I think this will be definitely the media of the future, actually, how we perceive entertainment.
Yeah, absolutely. I fully agree. Also for educational purposes, like, you know, talking or seeing historic figures and seeing those in stereo 3D is a whole different dimension, but it's really the case. And like you're saying, it feels much more immersive and the impression is stronger. We recently did a project where we recreated classic 3D modeling. We recreated a figure, the second president of Italy, Luigi Einaudi, and recreated him as a digital human. But what we also did is we plugged in the brain. And this was also, Luigi Einaudi was also an economics expert. So we trained and not trained, but basically using REC basically plugging in all his economic papers and books into the knowledge base. And now you can have a conversation with him, right? And just asking about economic principles or other things, and it's a whole different. I'm a big believer also in you know, stereo 3D for education, especially also in math, right? I keep on telling everyone when we talk about this topic about, you know, let's think about vector linear algebra, vector arithmetics, matrix calculation, all of this stuff. In the end, you have very practical applications like in 3D computer graphics, AI. All of these are built on linear algebra in the end, right? And so. But how they teach it in school is ridiculous. Like, I just helped my oldest daughter to, you know, to get a little bit more, helped her a little bit with linear algebra for school. And yeah. So terrible to see that again, now they're teaching it. There you can do so many cool things, but they teach it so badly, so dry. It's like, why would I care about it, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And then you have all the teachers complaining about the students that they can't concentrate. Like, oh no, they can't concentrate. But then you go at home and you see they're playing games like 10 hours without any interruption, without any totally focused, totally concentrated. And then the teacher's talking about, the concentration span is getting shorter. No, I think the contrast between the school system and the other entertainment boards that they have, the contrast is so high, and the school system hasn't developed any further. It's still like the old system. And this is really like now showing up that they don't care about the stuff in the school anymore so much because it's so boring. And I can totally understand that.
And we already touched a bit on the AI side of things, but how are you seeing that also changing volumetric capture in a sense of, well, we might not call 3D Gaussian splitting. It's not really deep learning. It's a little bit different technique, but neural radiance field, all of that jazz, but also depth estimation algorithms. You have, you know, a lot of crazy AI models that all fall under the 3D machine learning umbrella. So how do you see the impact of that? And then, well, I'll ask you later, but tell me a little bit about that.
The great thing about those topics is basically from our perspective, we don't care so much about how we process the data. So in the end, we have data which is very high resolution. And if we creating depth maps and meshes, because it's maybe easier to use on a phone with Unity or Unreal, or if you create like a Gaussian splitting, or if you generate a dynamic avatar, we basically don't care as long as we have the like high resolution data. And this is what our main goal is in a lot of sentences, that we create high resolution data and then we can look at which pipeline is applicable. I mentioned matrix resurrection earlier. I mean, even in 2020 and in the early 2020, we already used NeRF and we made it time consistent to render some of the shots there, because as you know, when you use meshes, for example, you have a lot of challenges with hair and like transparency layers. And there was one shot where a woman was jumping and running on the ceiling shortly, and there were bullets hitting into the wall, and you have like fog and everything and reflections and hair and everything going on and out of focus. So we used NeRF basically in this early days, like, and created like those the shot actually to make different camera movements, which were not possible usually. And those are things where we already really used it in this domain, because I think the way of how you calculate depth and so on doesn't matter so much. I think meshes is like still a very convenient way in most of the systems, because it's established over such a long amount of time. But it really depends on the project. So for movie projects, we often don't use meshes. We directly use like Gaussian splitting or something that gives more flexibility. But it really depends on the show, because you also have, I would say with Gaussians, you also have like different challenges, like how you make them reliable or how you can change the directions or whatever. So we're currently looking into how to make it more flexible also to create, I would say, like digital doubles, which are not based on meshes, but more like on AI system or AI rendered based systems, which are also then completely flexible. And then also, of course, the challenge is how to make it real time and high resolution as possible and keep the data low. So I would say this whole topic with NeRF and Gaussian splittings is very, very interesting, but it's still a very new thing. It's not it's not so compatible with a lot of project scopes at the moment, but every few weeks I would say there are coming more tools and more easy things out to integrate it, and then of course I think it will take over as a normal meshing pipeline. I think it's just the next generation of how to render scenes and images.
I agree. It's exactly the points you're making, right? The traditional tooling is still built around like geometry-based 3D modeling and volumetric, not so much. But you have some plugins like that you, for example, Unreal, you can use a NeRF in Unreal or 3D Gaussian splitting. But integration with your classic 3D content is still the challenge, like, you know, getting shadows, proper lighting, relighting is a big challenge in the end, obviously. But like I was saying, I fully agree. I think this is going to change rapidly, and we will get away from mesh-based, maybe a geometry rasterization-based technologies and go fully volumetric at a certain point. I don't know. Maybe that's also how our brain works in the end, and we're getting closer with these machines. By the way, a little trivia. Did you know that there were neuroscientists, and they looked at the hippocampus of the brain? And they found out that the hippocampus, you know, the piece that is responsible for long-term memorization, shares certain characteristics with a transformer AI-based model, which is based, which all LLMs are based on, right? They don't say the hippocampus works the same, but they found out there are certain shared characteristics, which is quite interesting if you think about it. But one interesting thing I wanted to ask you, I saw recently you shouted, I think, on LinkedIn. By the way, you should follow Sven on LinkedIn. Always great stuff there. You shared that you were also, or your company, you were also taking part in a remake of the famous Terminator 2 movie, and it's called, I think, the T2 remake or something. Can you maybe just talk for a second about it?
Yeah, not we as a company. So actually, it was more like that. We plan to do like the to showcase it, because I've heard from the art collective actually who created it.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very, very interesting case, because I'm always looking at when are the next tools available for feature film production, basically, and for documentaries and so on. And I think we all heard about Sora, what the possibilities are there. And then I've learned from Berlin, there's I think 50 artists were involved in the movie project, and I learned some of the people from Berlin, and they told me, they're working on a feature film actually that is currently in the production stage, and they released it. It's called Our T2 Remake, but I haven't worked on it actually. So it's more like I found the idea so crazy and so cool that they actually created not just like, because so many like 10-minute trailers came out for fake videos, and they really said, okay, let's create a full feature movie, like 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And they said, let's work with 50 artists on it, and everyone basically got a different piece. And the cool thing, it also shows about all the challenges with Gen AI when you want to work on a movie, because stuff like consistency is very challenging, especially in the early days and stuff like and. I think it's a very, very interesting project, and like a point in time where we will look back, and then we will look at this project and say, okay, look, this was 1 year ago, and now we are here. So it will us. It's like showing us the development of AI. It's like a milestone in this domain, I would say, which is quite nice, because it's like something we can always then refer to. And that's why I actually shared this project, because I really loved it so much. And I'm very sure we will see a lot of new movies coming out, which will be far more superior in terms of visual quality and so on. But if you just think about that, they created this movie and they started a year ago, actually, and it's now finished and running. It's a very, very cool project, I would say. It marks like a milestone in the movie industry, which I think a lot of people still don't get really what's happening there right now, especially with Gen AI, basically in terms of creating movies.
Yes. Yeah, I fully agree. And the pace, the progress is amazing. And by the way, sorry if I messed this up somehow. I messed this up a little bit. But anyhow, it's definitely great and surely a milestone. And I also agree what you're saying about this is massively going to change the movie industry. But also, I mean, in the end, some people might say, why would I need 3D volumetric capture? You still need that for high quality, but also, like you were saying, for the surgery case, right? Like for certain scenarios, like try to get some good training data. Well, good luck with that, right? But we live in a 3D world as humans, and you provide the 3D sensoring in the end as well for the visual capturing, right? So it's not just for the entertainment purposes. And so these were some great examples. Are there any other things you would see in the future of 3D volumetric capture that has potential for creating applications beyond the typical digital humans, right? You mentioned that.
I mean, right now we're getting also like crazy requests, like capturing rich people for being alive all the time, to have like a digital avatar. And there the goal is also to have now like a capturing of the person itself with all the mimics and everything, and use later then completely AI to train it into the system. One of the challenges is also nowadays actually that when you don't have enough material of the person, you need to interpolate it, and then basically you get away from the real person with the real behavior. So as much more data you have of the whole person in motion, and when it's 3D, then it's even better. You have like an archive of your family, and you can reuse it, and you can make your, even if your granddaddy or whatever is dead, you can still visit them as an avatar, and they can talk to you. So it feels a bit of spooky for a lot of people. But if you imagine like the first pictures that we had, where they had the same spookiness, where people say, yeah, this person is already dead, and you have a picture of the person that is still freaking out for those things. And now we see the same thing with digital avatars. Like imagine going to a graveyard and you have the people and you can talk to them. It's like freaking out a lot of people, of course, right now, because it's not there. But in a few years, it will become, I think, something that is normal, that you have those experiences there and you can talk to the people and see more what kind of person it was that is buried there. But apart from that, I think, especially I think the whole Gen AI direction is very, very impressive. And we will need more and more training data actually for all those AI systems. And especially now as more and more data gets basically corrupted because it's already generated by AI, and it's not good to train AI with just AI data.
Oh, yeah.
So getting more original data and also data which has higher resolutions and so on, it's increasing more and more. So right now I think a lot of the normal data is already trained down and they have already used it, but now the demand for original data, that it's very high resolution from a lot of different angles, is getting more and more important. But I think in the future, we will definitely get to a point where we actually, when we want to see a movie, the movie just get generated on our computer with all the persons and all the scenes and there's a story. So we will not use the capture system itself to create the movie itself, but it's more like getting all the training data right to have your actors trained into the system. And what I'm telling actors usually or during Berlinale also was that for the actors, they have now as the same way as a lot of people from the industry have pressure right now, because all the pipelines and all the tools are changing. I mean, it's not just the movie industry, but basically everything is moving more and more to AI. Yeah. And with this direction, with the artificialization of companies, I mean, we had the digitalization, now we have the artificialization of companies. A lot of new jobs will be generated, but also a lot of jobs will be gone. And especially for actors, when you can imagine you have a fully synthetic actor for as a studio and you create a lot of different movies with the same actor and he becomes more and more popular. I think it's very challenging for normal actors and to challenge those scenarios. I mean, just imagine like a Netflix in the future where you just open your Netflix and then you choose like you want to see something from Star Wars and you choose your actors. You choose maybe like in a PG group if it's for children or for older people, and then your story starts. And I think this will be something that we're running into. And if the actor is not scanned or not even available there in those systems, then he cannot participate on that. And this, I think this is something we currently also looking at, how can we make can come up with a system, which is also like this license and everything, to make actors in the future still something that is required or a good thing to have in the movie industry.
Yeah. The whole responsible aspect of this, we could talk for hours about it. Obviously, so it's good that you're thinking about this. The true movie maker will happen, right? Like you just say, hey, I wanted these characters and this is the storyline. And then you get a real movie made, not like with the old tools, the little movie maker tools. we'll get the real movie maker, the AI-based one. Well, Sven, I could talk like for hours with you, but I'm also mindful of your time and also the time for audience. So thank you so much for joining us today and talking about volumetric capture and sharing your insights. That's very much appreciated.
Thank you for being on your podcast. And let's stay in touch, of course.
Obviously. Thanks, everyone, for joining us for Digital Dialogues, your compact conversations on the future of tech. Watch our blog, follow our social media, and subscribe to our Reply podcast channels on all the favorite podcast platforms to not miss an upcoming episode. And of course, you can always listen to the previous episodes and other of my podcasts and my colleagues' podcasts at reply.com. Until then, take care and see you soon in the volumetric world. Bye-bye.